You're listening to Perspectives on Health and Tech, a podcast by Oracle Cerner, where we have conversations on creating a seamless and connected healthcare world where everyone thrives. It's estimated that 80% of an individual's health is determined by non-clinical factors, such as socioeconomic, behavioral, and physical environment. 38 million in the United States are facing hunger, including one in six kids. Those struggling with food insecurity are at an increased risk for chronic diseases such as diabetes and high blood pressure. Hunger increases their stress levels and affects their ability to take care of themselves and others. Hunger affects job and school performance, and it's even been linked to suicide risk. I'm Gloria Diamond, Director of Health Network Product Market Strategy for Oracle Cerner. Today on the podcast, I'm talking to colleagues from University Health, a safety net hospital in Kansas City that is continually finding ways to meet the food needs within their community.
Hi, I'm Allison Troutwine. I'm a project manager at University Health.
Hi, I'm Susan Wetti, Supervisor of Cultural Health Navigator, Arabic interpreter, and the director of One World Food Pantry at the University Health, Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi, I'm happy to be here today. I'm Deb Sisco. I'm the manager for patient advocacy and engagement at University Health.
Thank you all for joining me today to talk about this important topic. Susan, can you tell us how the Cultural Health Navigator program that you lead helps identify patients as food insecure?
The Cultural Health Navigator, they are interpreters. At the same time, they screen patients for social determinants of health. So as they screen patients, we identify different needs, top five that the patient were needing. And that's where the thoughts and the idea came, you know, to have an on-site food pantry for those patients. During the pandemic, we noticed a high increased volume in patients that we've been screening for the food insecurity. And mainly because most of the patients that we are serving, they are immigrants and refugees, and they are new to the country. So we noticed there's a high, a lot of them lost their jobs due to the pandemic. A lot of them don't have family support to help them just survive and just during the pandemic, because you find a family of six or have any family support. So those are the things that we notice. And most of the immigrants and the refugees that comes to the country, they have like big families. Last year we served about 110 languages, and within those languages, there is a huge need. We serve a huge number of patients that comes from Iraq, Somalia, Sudan, South America, and Palestine. And it's a huge immigrant population that has immigrated, especially like during the war in Iraq and during the war in Syria. We see a lot of immigrants coming to Kansas City. So those are the patients that we serve. We don't just provide the linguistic services, but also we do the screening for them, and we provide like transportation connection. We provide healthcare, like connection to primary care or to specialty care, getting their refills done on time, setting up the treatment plan for them. If the provider said, for example, that a patient needed a CT scan after this visit or an MRI, our job as navigators / interpreters is to provide those appointments for the patients. So we make sure we follow the treatment plan for the patient, because they are new here and they have no clue how the system works, especially like the healthcare system. So we work as just navigators and advocates for those patients.
When people first come to this country is when they're at highest risk of being really food insecure. But research shows that over the course of about 5 years, by the time someone, you know, has made their home in the United States for 5 years, a lot of them aren't food insecure anymore. So we're really talking about helping people when they need it the most, when they're, you know, when they're first getting here. And the fact that that kind of help and teaching Amanda Fish really pays off.
I love the uniqueness of the food pantry that we provide, you know, that they're run by interpreters and navigators. It helps really like break down one of the big mistakes that many patients or like immigrants do when they come to this country. And I had a patient that used to go to the regular grocery store, and he will pick up some dog food. He didn't know that it was for dogs. He just, you know, saw the sign outside, like on it. And, you know, of course, he doesn't know how to read English, so he wasn't able to identify what kind of food is this. So by them coming to the food pantry and we providing the food, we tell them, like, we explain to them in their own languages that, you know, this is this type of food, this is tuna, this is what you eat, and this is how you prepare it. Like, sometimes they ask, like, how do you cook this, or how do you prepare this, or can I fry this kind of food? So we hear a lot of questions from patients, and I think that's very powerful. And also just having that guide, you know, that patient can come back around food. And I just feel like we've been honored to, you know, to help like the new immigrants and just helping them, you know, navigate through the different type of food here.
Since your food pantry has started, what kind of feedback have you heard?
It's very, very positive feedback. Patient feels they're very respected. They're treated with dignity and respect when they come to the pantry. And that's something that we are very, like, we want that to be, you know, like the model of a food pantry that we have. It's not just we hand you the food and then you leave. No, we treat you with respect. Patients are treated with a smile when they come in, because we notice there is a lot of, like, I don't know if it's just the pandemic, but people come to the pantry and they're hurt. They are overwhelmed. Maybe it's a bad news they heard from the doctor, or maybe it's a health issue that they're struggling with. So we want not just to provide food, but when they come into us, we want to make it a pleasant visit. And sometimes it might be a long wait that they had at the doctor and they are very upset about it. So when they come to us, I try to reverse that experience and say, you know what, we're going to make it a good day for you. This is what we have. You know, we look forward to see you next week. Thank you for coming. And that's something like I teach my staff at the pantry. You have to thank the patient for coming. And they're like, no, thank you for providing the food to us. And just that interaction, I see patient returning back the following week. We have a lot of return patients. And in the first month, we served 370 patients. So that was a great success as well. So I think we have created a great impact.
It's important to add, we serve 370 patients who actually visited the pantry, but we track in the data who also been in that home. And so when you take that into consideration, in 1 month, we actually served 655 adults and 619 children, as well as 85 elderly.
I noticed like a lot of patients are coming back, or family members are coming back to us. They will say, you know, I heard from so-and-so, or so-and-so told me about the food pantry. So we noticed that there is a lot of the news has been out there. People are spreading it. Just word of mouth, There was no advertisement that we did. We first started with two clinics, the OB clinic and the weight management clinic. We screen patients. We send them over to the food pantry if they said yes for the food insecurity. But it looks like, patients are telling family members, somebody's hearing from somebody, and then I feel like it's a positive thing because it opened doors to us, not just as an organization, but, even for the food pantry, like you could hear like the community saying, thank you for doing this. This is what we really needed. Thank you for thinking about this. This is really appreciated. And I you could hear like, how thankful they are.
Besides screening and intervening on an individual basis for the food and transportation needs, how are those social determinants of health being addressed at the community level?
Sure. Nonprofit hospitals like University Health conduct a community health needs assessment every 3 years. And we were seeing the rate of food insecurity in Jackson County. This is the community where we are located. Was it about 16% compared to the state of Missouri and to national rates? The state of Missouri's rate of food insecurity was 14% and national rates are around 12% respectively. So studies, as you talked about at the top of the podcast, Gloria, studies have shown that poverty creates barriers to access, including health services, healthy foods, and other necessities that contribute to poor health outcomes. We really saw an opportunity to partner with a community-based organization like Harvesters, which is well-known locally, but for those of you in the audience that are not local, Harvesters is a certified member of Feeding America. It's a nationwide network of more than 200 food banks, and they are a registered nonprofit that serves all of the Kansas City region.
One of the other projects that the Cultural Food Committee is working on is what we're right now just calling a food finder. So it'll be a resource for immigrants and refugees first coming to this country on where do I go to get, foods that I'm familiar with. Okay, I'm in this city, I don't know anything about it. So it was really an important learning aspect from the cultural health navigators that when we want to distribute this, we have to be cognizant of how they learn information from one another. So that word of mouth becomes really important. And how do we integrate that into distribution of the information that we're trying to get across?
Allison, can you tell us how University Health formed a partnership with a local food bank and why did you pursue that route instead of only doing referrals?
Yes, we just saw this need and we thought that an on-site food pantry would be the best way to serve our community. So going back a little bit, I attended the Cerner Health Conference in 2018, and that's when I first learned about Geisinger's Food Fresh Pharmacy. I know a lot of people were working in this space for a long time, but it was new to me. And I really just felt like this is something that we should have here for our community. So shortly after that, I met with people from Harvesters, our local food bank, that were also interested in that intersection between hunger and health. And we started small with a monthly pop-up produce distribution. We provided anyone that attended, there's no means testing. If you are in need of food, you can get that food assistance. And in this case, it's all healthy, fresh produce. And we were able to talk about different ways to prepare the item. Some of it was a little bit, spaghetti squash or something that some folks might not be that familiar with. And so we started small. And then we just continued to advocate for an on-site pantry that is, in my opinion, a positive in many ways. A lot of the community members have transportation issues. If they're already here for their appointment and then don't need to go to a referral to another location, it's just helping them in many ways. So that's where we are and why we decided to pursue this route.
Meeting lots of needs. Since many of the recipients of your pantry come from different cultures, how have you provided foods that are tailored to meet your community's needs?
We actually wrote and received a grant from the Health Forward Foundation to give us the opportunity to work with a number of CBOs in the area and folks with the same interests around this with their folks, and put together what we call the Cultural Food Equity Committee. And so we invited people from organizations all over Kansas City to meet with us, kind of in a, you know, let's wrap around the table and let's spend some time studying what this is really all about, and then look at what best practices are already out there. So we spent the good part of the first year actually doing that together. We also developed and implemented a survey with our folks, asking questions like, what are the foods that are common, you know, to your culture that you eat? How often do you eat those foods? Are they available easily to you in your area? And if not, how far do you have to go to be able to get those? We learned a lot through that survey, and we were determined when we were opening the pantry that we kept the information in mind. So we are very careful when stocking that pantry to make sure that there are basics there that are culturally appropriate. Rice, for instance, dry beans, spaghetti. The Somali population, I had no idea they eat a lot of spaghetti. So it's really a lot of learning and seeing what is out there. And that particular group is really growing. We're moving now from information on how do we stock a pantry to we're thinking now about how do we offer just some quick information for folks, immigrants and refugees, around shopping. You know, how many of you know how to, I mean, if I don't speak English, reading a can is very difficult, let alone if I want to look at something like, you know, what's the added sugar amount, or is that even important? So we're in the process now of developing some work around the stoplight process for reading, you know, reading nutritional value, and how can we make that and adapt that to something that could be very usable, where we could give a little card to somebody that they could take into the grocery store that's in their own language, that would show them very simply and easily how to make a healthier choice within the parameters of what they can purchase.
Susan, can you talk about any special food needs for the cultures that you serve?
For example, since we are a very diverse organization, I see a lot of Muslim. And one thing that we put in consideration is no pork for the Muslim population and for the patient that we are serving, so that we respect everybody's belief. And by just giving, you know, an example of a food pantry that can accommodate everyone. We have been providing like different food types. And sometimes, like just from the survey that we did, surveying 100 patients, like Deb mentioned, we noticed like, you know, people eat different food, but there is a lot of similarity.
She and I were looking at an order for Harvester. She was showing me how she does that. And I was like, oh, look, they have ham. They have lunch meat. And Susan looked at me and she said, they do, but we can't put that in the same refrigerator that we're going to put foods that we're going to give to Muslims. I wouldn't have even thought about that. What a learning experience that was. Not just that they're not going to eat the food, but we don't want to store those together. So there's just so much beauty in what we learn from each other and how we teach each other how to treat one another in a very respectful way. I just think it's, I mean, I learn from her every day.
That's beautiful. Respecting people's culture, providing dignity, all very important work that you're doing. I'm sure that listeners are going to want to know, how do you build a food program that makes an impact like what you're doing at University Health and you know, not only makes an impact, but is sustainable for the long term? What advice do you have?
I think that, first of all, it's so important just to build a team of passionate people that can work together to address the needs of our community. And I can't tell you how wonderful this group at University Health is. I am so privileged that I get to work with them and learn. As Deb said, I learn from Susan and Deb just all the time. And so I think that's crucial. We also worked to get executive buy-in, and we're very fortunate to have that. Very fortunate to have funding from the University Health Charitable Foundation, and partnerships in the community, including harvesters, community gardens. We also have diapers from our local diaper bank and other items that our community needs all at the pantry. We have wonderful cultural health navigators like Susan and her team that are helping our patients learn about the work that we have, or this pantry and this opportunity for food and help. And then I would just talk about ways that we've seen other staff contribute to this effort, including, this has been unexpected, but our security team found out about the pantry and took it upon themselves to raise money to go out and buy dignity items. These are items like shampoo and soap. These are not provided by federal programs. And so it's a real need. And so I was really amazed by this group of University Health staff that came together to help us stock those items in the pantry. And I think it's just all really about working together and collaborating and learning from each other to find ways that we can all help each other.
The other thing we want to be careful that we're doing is taking care of our own. And when we were doing the research and reading, we learned that nationally about 20% of healthcare workers actually experience food insecurity. So, you know, the pandemic especially brings that to the forefront. I mean, you know, you could be an RN, but an RN single mom with three kids, if you've been to a grocery store lately, is going to have a pretty tough time trying to feed all those mouths, especially if they eat like they do in my family. So we made sure that food pantry is accessible also to the staff. There's nothing they have to prove or hand to us or anything like that. If they come down and say, hey, I could use a little help, we're going to say we totally get it. And we're going to start filling that bag so that you go home with something to feed your family that night. Allison spoke earlier about how lucky we all feel to be able to work together. And there is not a truer statement. A number of us have been together now for years working on and thinking about these issues. We have a lot bigger plans, actually, than just the pantry. But the beauty of the whole issue is really the collaboration. None of us could have done any of this alone, but we intentionally bring together people from different departments in the hospital and people with different perspectives. It's kind of fun to watch. There's one person on our team, she actually heads our social work department, who I rely on so much because she's my person who said, okay, Deb, that's a great idea, but hold back because we need to do this and this and this in ABC order. So you really learn to appreciate the skills that other people have and lean on and rely on those to give yourself balance. The collaboration is actually everything in making this work.
Allison, Susan, Deb, thank you so much for coming and talking to me today. It's really inspiring to hear the work that you're doing through University Health and the One World Food Pantry. Thanks again for joining us.
Be sure to subscribe to Perspectives on Health and Tech on iTunes, Spotify, and Pandora. For more insights from industry experts, visit Cerner.com/perspectives. Want to chat about a topic? Share your thoughts and ideas at podcast@cerner.com or tag us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.